originally had just one page of the outline, which is the outline of the book itself, and then my introduction that I was going to give to you is a lot longer than just the couple sentences on the actual outline of the book. And then I thought Friday, I was down the building, I said, you know, after I read all these verses, some of you, maybe not all of you, would like to have a copy just because of the historical outline. And you can see the date through there, and it does give you a rather lengthy picture, because I just wrote out the verses. That's what I have in my notes selected. I just quoted the front page of my sermon notes and decided to give it to you. So here's kind of the history of the Israelites after the divided kingdom. So in 722 B.C., 1 Kings 15, in the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and took, and he carried them captive to Assyria. So that tells you in the Bible where the northern kingdom Israel was taken captive to Assyria. Then I've given you a couple other verses that give the same thing in the book of Kings, and then it mentions that only Judah is left. The next major heading under the bold print for the date, there's that 20-year period, 606 B.C. to 586 B.C., that's when Babylon came and made three different raids on the southern kingdom of Judah. The final one being the capture of Jerusalem in 586 and taking them back to Babylon. So in 2 Kings 24, verse 1, in his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, meaning came over to Jerusalem. In 2 Kings 25, verse 4, the city wall was broken down. I put this verse in just because we're talking about Nehemiah tonight. Verse 10, all the armies of the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, were with the captain of the guard, broke down the walls of Jerusalem all around. Judah, next verse 21, Judah was carried away captive from its own land. So there you have the Bible verses to where Israel, the northern kingdom, was taken captive by Assyria. Judah, the southern kingdom, taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. So while Babylon is in power in 539 in the story of Daniel, and you remember the handwriting on the wall story, says that very night Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. So there's your Babylonian people. And then Darius the Mede received the kingdom. So you have Babylon, then Persia, and Mede. They were two empires together. And he was about 62 years old. This is at the very end of the Babylonian captivity, 70 years. Those were in previous notes I gave you. And so Persians then became the dominant power. So you have in Ezra chapter 1, verse 1, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia. So then he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, also put it in writing, saying that decree is actually written in verses 2, 3, and 4 of Ezra chapter 1. And then part of that phrase in the decree was that they could return to their homeland, to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Lord God of Israel. Okay. Then Ezra leads the second group back to Jerusalem. Then Haggai, Zechariah, Zerubbabel, they all go back to build the house of God till it's finished. And then Nehemiah receives word about the broken down walls, and in 444 B.C., Nehemiah gets the king's permission to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. So I was going to read all these verses to you as my introduction, because you don't have just a couple verses on the outline. So now you can go to the outline itself to follow along, where you have verse by verse of the book of Nehemiah. That page I just read to you was the introduction only. And I gave it a rather complete introduction. So you can go back and read those verses, the verses before and after, because I just quoted the verses in your notes that had to do with the lesson. So there's more to the stories that are there. now the book of Nehemiah tonight. Now, number one in your outline, Nehemiah is introduced to us. He's a cupbearer to the king. And in chapter 1 of the book of Nehemiah, beginning in verse 2, we have the story beginning. Hanani, Nehemiah says, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah. Remember, Nehemiah's at the very bottom of your introduction. And so he's the very last with Malachi. And so Nehemiah and Malachi are the end of the New Testament story. So the house of the Lord has been built. People return to Babylon, Shushan, Persia, Susa, and they give a report about what they saw in Jerusalem. So Nehemiah is there. So one of my brethren came with brethren from Judah, the verse says. So I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, who had survived the captivity concerning Jerusalem. They said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province there are in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and the gates burned with fire. In verse 4, chapter 1, Nehemiah says, so it was, Nehemiah said, I heard these words, and I wept and mourned for many days. I fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Kind of like Nehemiah, like Jesus when he beheld the city of Jerusalem right before he's crucified. So there's a time for us, too, to cry for brethren who are not saved. For brethren who are spiritually harmed or physically harmed or in difficult straits, the time for you and me to cry over that situation and pray. Like Nehemiah. In verses 5 through 11, we have Nehemiah's prayer. And then he ends the prayer by saying, O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant. And then chapter 2 of Nehemiah, verse 1, Nehemiah is going about his duty as the cupbearer to the king. So because Nehemiah is sad about hearing that report, in verse 2, the king said to me, why is your face sad? Since you're not sick. You see, there's things that happen in our lives that affect the way we look. We just sometimes look worried about situations that exist. Then the king said, this is nothing but sorrow of the heart. And then Artaxerxes, who's the king, asked Nehemiah, what do you need? And Nehemiah again prays before he answers. In verse 5, he says, I ask that you send me to Judah. In verse 7, he says, and send me letters of authorization for a lot of different things along the journey. So he has a lot of authority behind him in this journey back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. In 11 through 18, he came to Jerusalem and he was there for 3 days. He does his surveillance at night. Takes a few men with him. He didn't tell anyone when he arrived. Then he gathers a few more people together and reveals his plan. And he gathers them together, and in verse 17, he says, see the distress we're in? Now, Nehemiah's back in Jerusalem now. So you see the distress we're in? Now, Jerusalem lies waste. Gates are burned with fire. Come, let's build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach. Let's go to work. Well, let the work begin. So now we have opposition to the work. Back in verse 10 of chapter 2, then when Sanballat, Tobiah, these are officials, they heard of it, that Nehemiah was coming. They were deeply disturbed that a man had come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel. You see, till Nehemiah comes, and they were kind of in charge and kind of ruled the roost, so to speak. So here's the opposition. There's 6 of them. Put in your notes. Chapter 2, verse 19. I'll read the whole verse to you. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem heard of it. He said, let's rise up and build. They heard that. Well, they laughed at us, despised us, you're doing? Will you rebel against the king? Well, they challenged Nehemiah's motives. And of course, the lesson is going to be when you and I are involved in a work, you know, there's going to be some opposition. You can almost expect that in any situation in life. No matter what you say or want to do, there's going to be someone that says, well, you know, I don't like that color. Or whatever it is. Oh, I wouldn't go there. No, that's not my favorite place. Well, so no matter what you say, that doesn't mean that that what they're saying is true. It's just that people have preferences. Well, Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, they hear the visitor. What are you thinking about? You know, it's kind of difficult to work when those around you sneer and ridicule your work. I'm not talking about me. But you know, we do our best work when we're encouraged. We do our best work when everyone agrees, or when we're all involved in the work. But Nehemiah, verse 20, here's the remedy. Nehemiah says, so I answered them, and I said, the God of heaven himself will prosper us, therefore we, his servants, will arise up and build. Yeah. It's interesting, in chapter 3, let's put that one in your notes, but all of chapter 3, 33 verses list the names of the workers that are assisting Nehemiah in building the wall, and it mentions the high priest, the priest, the men, and then every verse gives a name of a family, and then it says, and next to him, the name of a family. Next to him, name of a family and the children. For 33 verses, all you get are people's names saying, next to him, next to him, next to him. So you get an idea, why was Nehemiah so successful? Because everyone was elbow to elbow involved in the work. Second discouraging thing or opposition, in chapter 4, beginning of verse 1. I'll read the verses to you. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he was furious. Indignant. And he mocked the Jews. He spoke before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? More mockery. Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish? Stones that are burned? So now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, whatever they build, even if a fox goes up on it, they'll break down that stone wall. Kind of like saying, you know, we'll huff and we'll blow your house down, or your wall. So I guess with these three boys again, the idea is if you can't impeach what your enemy is doing, call them names. They're trying to brainwash the people against Nehemiah's work, these three leaders in the opposition. So here's Nehemiah's remedy. Again, he prays. Says, hear, O our God. And then after his prayer, the verse says, so we built the wall. The entire wall was joined together up to half its height. For the people had a mind to work. So the second opposition was met. The third one. So these three boys are not going to give up. Says, and all of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. So Nehemiah, what are you going to do now? Well, Nehemiah sets up a defense and a counterattack. In verse 9, and there's a list of things that Nehemiah does. In verse 9, he begins with prayer. We made our prayer to God. And because of them, second it says, we set a watch against them day and night. So let's pray and let's put people in position, watchmen. In verse 13, he said, I set the people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. Now we armed them. In verse 16, it says, so it was from that time on. Half my servants worked at construction, while the other half held their spears, their shields, their swords, and wore armor. So half worked, and the other half worked. They in verse 18. It says, every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built, and the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. So when the opposition comes, you're going to sound the trumpet. And he says in verse 20, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there, and our God will fight for us. Then one other interesting piece that took place where all these people are building the wall in verse 23. But neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me took off their clothes. So you wore the same clothes every day. However, there was an exception, verse 20, the very last phrase, except that everyone took them off for washing. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So Nehemiah met the opposition again. Number 4. These three boys are at it again. Chapter 6, verse 2. Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying. So Nehemiah's still, and all these people are working. So now they said, let's have a conference. So they said, come, let's meet together among the villages in the plain of Ono. Interesting name for that, but the plain of Ono. But they sought, Nehemiah says, they sought to do me harm. See, the wall is finished. Only the gates now needed to be hung. So when all else fails, I guess the opposition said, let's just call a meeting and talk about it. Of course, Sanballat and Tobiah wanted to ambush Nehemiah in the valley. So in verse 3, here's Nehemiah's remedy. I sent messengers to them saying, I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and go down to you? Probably sounds reasonable to hold a meeting. But Nehemiah knew what it was, so he said, Ono. It's a meeting in the plain of Ono. And he said it 4 times. Now the 5th opposition. 5th time. These boys are not going to give up. Now verse 5 of chapter 6. So then Sanballat sent his servant to me as before, but now the 5th time, with an open letter in his hand. Oh, in other words, let's resort to a false rumor. Let's have a letter campaign. Let's put out a political mailer. In so many words. Let's misrepresent Nehemiah's motives. Let's accuse him of self-seeking. All these things. Well, here's Nehemiah's reply. Verse 8. So I sent to him saying, no such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart. So Nehemiah denies the accusation, and then he prays again. Verse 9, oh God, strengthen my hands. So stay at your task. Prove the opposition wrong. Number 6, the last opposition, well really there's one more, but these from these three boys. It says in verse 10, that Shemaiah, who was a secret informer, the verse tells about. In other words, he was a Judas in Nehemiah's camp. He was a trusted friend. Shemaiah was a double agent. He tries to get Nehemiah to fear for his life. And Nehemiah, they're going to kill you, he says. You need to go and hide in the temple. In other words, run for your life, Nehemiah. Well, Nehemiah answers in verse 11. Then I said, should such a man as I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? Well, Nehemiah's going to stay at the work, and almost like Esther said, if I perish, I perish. The king will please my God. That's what Nehemiah says. I'm not running for my life. It's a good work. I'm not coming down. I'm not stopping the work that I'm doing. No, I'm not going to go hide. No. So he says, I'll not go in. Then it says, then I perceive that God has not sent him at all, Shemaiah. But that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Ah, Nehemiah. So now the major heading on your outline, and the story of Nehemiah continues. And the wall is now going to be finished. Chapter 6, closing verses, verse 15. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Ehud in 52 days. Built the whole wall around Jerusalem. 52 days. And it happened when all our enemies heard of it, and all nations around us saw these things, they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. Chapter 7, verse 1, then it was when the wall was built that I hung the doors. Now there's a celebration. In chapter 8, Ezra and Nehemiah, again, all a half a dozen of these prophets in the Old Testament are all together in Jerusalem at the same time. So Ezra and Nehemiah, they gather all the people together. In verse 8 it says they read distinctly from the book of the law, and they gave the sense and helped them to understand the reading. And while they read, the people were standing up during the whole reading. And they read from the book of the law day after day in this celebration. But then there's a few more things that take place between chapters 8 and the last one in chapter 13. But now we go to chapter 13. The rest of it is just a reading of the law and what the law said and things like that. So now we get to the last chapter, and Tobiah's campaign was not altogether unsuccessful. Nehemiah had to go back to Persia, because when he made his request from the king, the chapter 1 specifically said, I will leave for a certain number of days. So when Nehemiah finished the building of the wall, he goes back to Susa, the capital of Persia. Now he comes back. In chapter 13, verse 6, he makes a return trip to Jerusalem. He says, but during all this, I was not in Jerusalem, after all the reading of the law, the building of the wall and the reading of the law, the building of the wall, and the setting of the gates. And when that's finished, Nehemiah returns. But now he comes back to Jerusalem and all. For in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I had returned to the king. But then after certain days, I obtained leave from the king. I came to Jerusalem and discovered the evil that Eliashib had done for Tobiah. Oh, that's Tobiah. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. They had their cohorts. This Eliashib says in Nehemiah, says, it grieved me bitterly. And then from verses 7 through 30, almost each verse begins with, I commanded or I warned. Every verse from verses 8 through 29, it says, Nehemiah says, I commanded, I warned. So he puts set things in order. Then verse 30 closes it out. Then I cleansed them of everything pagan. Well done, Nehemiah. So there's your story of Nehemiah in 25 minutes. Rather quickly, but that's why I gave you a rather lengthy note to review the story. See, a lot of lessons, but the idea is, you know, the battle never ceases. Nehemiah built the wall. Ezra and Nehemiah brought in a reform. They built the house of the Lord. It's finished. But then when Nehemiah leaves, the cohorts of Sanballat, Geshem, and Tobiah come back up, revive themselves. So, you know, hopefully God always will raise up a Nehemiah to toss out the Sanballat. Yes, sir. Goodbye. All right, so that's the lesson. I may do one more, I'm not sure. and then I know for sure I'm finished. I think I might want to do Haggai. Only three chapters. The reason why I want to finish with Haggai, because he's one of the prophets at this time also, right along with Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, all of them are together within a couple of years of each other in the same city. It's interesting, the story of Haggai, now, Lord willing, I might think about telling you that story, is different. Haggai is a prophet, but instead of being God's messenger to the people wonder why they are in this mess, and they cry out to Haggai, and Haggai makes his plea to God, yeah, God, why are we in this mess? So it's kind of a reverse message, and then God answers him. So we kind of get a good story here in three chapters of Haggai. Yes, God, why are we in this mess? And God has an answer for that. Why is there trouble and strife in our world? Haggai, like us, we wonder. There's an answer. So Lord willing, maybe next week, time for this. All right, let's we sing a song of encouragement at the close of a lesson each time. If you're here this evening, not a member of the New Testament Church, you know the plan, you know the requirements. Repent and be baptized for remission of sins. If that's your need, that's your desire, if that's what's on your heart, you need to let that be known so we can accomplish that. If you want to ask brethren for strength or encouragement, we can also do that. So let's stand together and sing the song that then is selected for us.